Hello and welcome to Dateline New Haven. I'm your host, Paul Bass, inviting you to look behind the headlines on the stories that make New Haven tick. Today we're going to have another one of our Afro-Semitic News Hour segments where we look over some of the top stories of the day, little gloss on them, and then listen to some local music by the Afro-Semitic Experience, our favorite group, as well as a few others I'm going to throw into the mix today. I have a very controversial point I'd like to start out today's program with. Ready? It's not every day that journalists take a stand and risk getting people angry. But here goes. Ready, folks? It's really important to do fire safety. Okay, I don't see any Rotten Tomatoes coming through the window. I don't see any people marching with picket signs outside the Independent. Why am I making such a controversial statement? Now, of course, everyone agrees that fire safety is important. Of course, we don't do it as much as we think we should. Today, they're doing a demonstration at the Fire Training Academy with the Fire Marshal Bobby Doyle about how to deal with your Christmas tree so you don't have a fire with your Christmas tree. But the reason I made the controversial statement today that fire safety is important and that we don't pay enough attention to it is because what happened yesterday at the Jewish Community Center in Woodbridge, there was a four-alarm fire. The Jewish Community Center is up in a hill right past the New Haven line. It's for the whole greater New Haven community. And there are a lot of people in that building during the day. This broke out at 4 o'clock in their after-school programs. There are seniors there. There are people working out of machines. There are people in the swimming pool. And there was a fire. Flame shot out of the sauna in the basement. And there was an explosion. This is a dangerous situation. This is the suburb, folks. They had trucks all the way down the street a half mile away running their lines up. And people coming from different departments. That had the making of being a serious disaster. But you know what, folks? No, there were 200 to 300 people in that building. 300 people. No one got hurt. They were out of there in minutes. There were 15 people in the pool. They got out in minutes. And they're actually shepherded next door to a senior living facility called Brookdale Woodbridge. And everybody was welcome there. And they were able to evacuate that building because just in the last few weeks, they've been doing emergency fire drills. They've been having the whole staff work out. How are we going to save lives and keep old people, young people, people at the school programs, people in the pool? How are we going to keep them safe? And folks, that is a great story. It's not a great story. There was a fire. The center is closed. They're assessing the damage. It's not a great story that two firefighters had smoke inhalation. They had to go to the hospital. It turns out they're going to be okay. But nobody else was hurt. Now, contrast that to Oakland, where they had people living, you know, with such a housing crunch there. The rents are so high. Artists are living in these low-rent illegal studios. They're having performances there. There are hardly fire exits anywhere to get out safe. And 36 people and counting are dead there. And they had, I believe, they didn't have as many people at the JCC, though I'm not sure as that. And here we had the story, which was the non-story in a sense, that there wasn't anybody hurt. So my hat is off. Not my yarmulke, but my hat is off to the JCC. What a great job they did yesterday. Meanwhile, I'm going to play another song for the Afro-Semitic Experience. You've been listening to Eliyahu Hanavi. This one is called A Plea for Peace. And it's from an album of theirs called A Plea for Peace. You are listening to Dateline New Haven, WNHH Radio, broadcast at 103.5 FM and live stream at newhavenindependent.org. And you're also listening to A Plea for Peace from the Afro-Semitic Experience, a great local group. And today we're doing one of our Afro-Semitic Experience news update on WNHH. Something else that's in the news is Donald Trump has a new pick to head his Housing and Urban Development Department, HUD. And that's a really important pick for New Haven. We have a lot of public housing in New Haven. We have a lot of rental subsidies that come through HUD for Section 8. And we have a lot of rebuilding we've been doing. Public housing in some parts of New Haven looks so different from what public housing used to look like. You go to Monterey Place, which used to be Elm Haven. You go to Kew Terrace, which used to be Kew Terrace. You go to West Rock. You go to the developments there. They don't call them projects anymore. And they look like they're on the Truman Show. They're beautiful. They used to be run down. But we're still in the process of doing that. HUD pays a lot of the freight for that. Will they continue to do so under a new HUD Secretary, Ben Carson, who has been very skeptical about concepts like fair housing, mixing people with different incomes together, and about government support for poor people? He did grow up in public housing himself. Tony Harp, our mayor, was talking about this yesterday on this very program on Mayor Money and Dateline New Haven. And there's something pressing going on here that she's hoping she can get face-to-face with Ben Carson to talk about. And that's Church Street South. We've talked a lot about it. There's been a lot of reporting about it in The Independent. It's a big deal because that's a 301-unit apartment complex right across from Union Station. That's the gateway to our city, and it's been an embarrassment and a very dangerous and rundown place for decades. And the federal government, HUD, allowed that to happen. It's owned by a private developer, and all the rents were paid by HUD through the Section 8 program. While HUD was paying the rents, they kept coming and winking at the owner and saying, everything here is in great shape. You got an 80 out of 100 on your inspections for health and safety. You can keep renting here and getting our $3 million a year in rent. The city would go there and say, this place is dangerous. Sometimes we have to evacuate the place in the winter, parts of it, because of CO poisoning. Sometimes we have to, we give you inspections where you're failing 20 out of 30. There's so much mold. They didn't repair the roofs in decades. There was some never replaced, I believe. And you had just mold in the walls. People with asthma couldn't breathe. Decks falling apart in patios. And finally, when a legal aid lawyer, working with the same purposes as the Harp administration in New Haven, forced the federal government to go back and look and say, no, this isn't 80 out of 100. This is unlivable. And we've had our own refugee crisis where we're trying to get, what was it, at the end, 266 families into new housing. And we're doing that, and we're going to knock the place down, and we're going to rebuild it. Well, the plan was, it's privately owned by this Northland Development Company that made the mess too, and HUD let them. But the city said, we'll work with you instead of fight with you because we're working together on relocating people. And we're going to help you do the kind of thing you want to do there. The reason they came to the city in the first place, the previous mayor drove them around and said, we're going to knock this down. You can make a beautiful place across from the train station, make a lot of money. And then in the end, that didn't work out because the city changed its position and said 20% of it needs to be affordable housing, which can mean a lot of different things, but it doesn't mean rich people. So this year, they went back and they said, you know what? Even with 30%, we'll do it. If the government can help subsidize housing for 30% of the people, we'll build 900 to 1,000 apartments. So we'll have as many affordable units as there used to be, 300. But we'll also have 600 to 700 market rate because it's right across from the train station. Everyone's talking about transit-oriented development. And we're going to put stores in there. And we're going to do what was the... Actually, when you go back and read, it was the original vision for that complex as a gateway to the city as you walk through to downtown and not get mugged. Problem. So the city and the developer said, we're going to work together. We're going to go to HUD. And we're going to try to get something called a Choice Neighborhood Grant. Those are hard to get. We're going to try to get $30 million. $20 million of it's going to go toward building that project so it can be done. We can leverage the affordable housing and build it up, make a nice gateway to the city. The city just learned it did not win that grant. It's a very competitive process. It's very political. We didn't score. And we didn't score in a political process when Democrats were in charge who owe their elections to cities like New Haven and with whom we have contacts and ideological affinity. Now there's a new gang in town, Republicans who didn't get any votes in New Haven to speak of, and have a different philosophical bent. And now we got to figure out what happens with Church Street South. We're clearing it out. There are 100 families, under 100 families left. They're hoping to have it out in a few months. They're going to knock it down. So what's going to happen next? Tony Harp, the mayor, was honing her pitch to try to convince Ben Carson to give the money I salute her in that. I hope she succeeds. New Haven hopes she succeeds. I'm not betting on it. We weren't getting the money beforehand. It's going to be a lot less likely now. Now, the State Department of Housing, we're talking to them. And that actually is possible. They've been funding some projects. They've done some good projects in New Haven recently, including affordable housing at the Lofts in Winchester and supportive housing. But it's not a given. So people are wondering, should we change our plan? In the end, will this be a victory for Northland? Let the place go to seed. Now, immediately, they came to New Haven under what turned to be false pretenses. They left holding the bag, but they were responsible. They were the owners. Will they win in the end? If there's no money come from the government, they say, hey, what else can we do? We own the property. It's going to have to be full market rate. What's interesting to me about that is that there's a lot that people have definite opinions on about the Trump administration and new conservative policies, and a lot of informed positions on both sides, right? So they're going to be changing the way things are done. And then there are issues that do challenge our preconceptions about what's right and left, what's right and wrong. So some people for a long time have felt that Church East South should just be market rate housing. That's what the market dictates. It's prime real estate. It's right across from the train station. So there are people in New Haven who did not vote for Donald Trump who might believe the government shouldn't be spending money to rebuild that as public housing, because those 300 units that were lost, those 300 families or 266 are getting vouchers to live elsewhere. But then there's another point of view that says it's already expensive, too expensive to live in New Haven. There's a dire shortage of affordable housing. That's why people would squat in places like in Oakland where the fire happened, the Ghost Complex, why they squatted in a place in the hill called Daggett Street Square, which we didn't let a fire happen on it. We closed it down. Inspectors went in time. Unfortunately, there wasn't loss of life. But there's a serious housing shortage, and people say housing, public housing is needed. It shouldn't be our whole city. We have a quarter to a third of our city with subsidized housing, but that we need it. And they're worried about Ben Carson saying that fair housing laws are communist, and he doesn't like communism, so he thinks that's bad. We shouldn't be paying to mix people of different incomes together. And then the other side says, you should do that because that makes better housing for all and a more just city. And then the other side says, let the market dictate, the market knows better, and still have a safety net. And then the other side said we had a bad experience with ghettos when the original public housing developments were just for the poor and the poor only in secluded spots. And that's how we had to spend so much money to rebuild them, and now it's successful. And then people on the other side say that's not a smart way to build a city. So all I'm saying is that without weighing in this segment about whether we're glad or not glad about Donald Trump, obviously I'm not personally glad, but you have different points of view, there are actually unsolved social policy questions that don't so easily always fit into liberal versus conservative or urban versus suburban. And so, yes, if Church East South just gets rebuilt as only market rate housing, that will reflect a different era where government is not going to be paying extra to have poor people mixed in with middle class and maybe wealthy people. They're not going to let prime real estate be used for low-income housing, and they're not going to help subsidize poor people's living as much. But there are still urban policy questions that are unresolved and that we're going to get to. We're also going to have conflict. So why don't we have a 2-minute and 19-second interlude of a battle New Haven style with a different local band, not the Afro-Semitic Experience, but Groovsky. And one of my favorite tracks called Groovsky versus Godzilla. Not exactly Trump versus New Haven or Carson and HUD versus the Housing Authority, but a battle just the same.
Go out and rent the DVDs. down and watch the roof move in.
Versus Godzilla by the New Haven band Groovski on today's Afro-Semitic News Hour on Dateline New Haven at WNHH Radio. I'm Paul Bass, your host, taking you through some of the headlines of what's going around our city. Skating is going to happen in our city, we think, this winter, after all, if the weather cooperates. Last night, Monday night, as Markeisha Ricks reports today in the New Haven Independent, the Board of Alders gave permission for the city to rent equipment from the town of Southbury for an outdoor skating park. They're going to go to East Shore Park and run a temporary skating rink for this winter. Now, why do they have to do that? Because the city had to close the Ralph Walker rink for the summer. That's the rink in East Rock that's very popular. Kids love it. Families love it. Young adults love it. Older adults love it. But it was losing $50,000 to $60,000 a year. And more importantly, it was falling apart. It needed to be fixed. So the city closed it for the winter to fix it up and come up with a plan to have it generate more money. But there was an outcry about it, understandably, and people couldn't understand why they were doing it in the winter rather than the summer. But in any case, they had no place to skate. People were upset, so the mayor said to the Parks Department, find some place for them to skate. So they found that this equipment was available. It wasn't going to cost a lot of money. Their own staff can for this winter, rather than subcontract it, run an outdoor skating rink at East Shore Park. It's going to come as many hours, as long as it's cold enough. Remember, folks, it's not always cold in the winter. I heard there's going to be a lot of snow this winter, but that's the Farmer's Almanac. Don't know if we can believe it. But that's interesting. So Mother Nature is going to have the final answer. And, you know, everyone loves to complain about government, and it's important to talk about your government as long as we're still allowed to do that legally in this country for the next, at least until mid-January. But as one of our commenters, Hugh Navin, said about the complaints, talk about your ungrateful citizens. Art Broke City offers to finally fix one of the many parks and recreation facilities, and all people can do is complain that it'll be closed for one entire season. Will they be happy when it's finished? That comment is posted to the story today on the New Haven Independent. You're welcome to add your own comment. I'm going to play a song by another local musician named Steve Mednick about another facility that was closed for a long time. People couldn't figure out how to get it opened. The city of New Haven, under the previous administration, asked Yale, which was the landlord on the block, to help make some room available and access for fire trucks and emergency vehicles to get in so they could open the old Palace Theater that was shuttered for 14 years. And it never worked. But then New Haven, under the new administration, looked back at the maps and found they actually could physically make it work. So they opened the new College Street Music Hall. They beat Yale at the game. And here's a song Steve Mednick wrote about that, we heard a rumor that it might be about the person at Yale who was trying to stop them illegally from making it a more vibrant city. The song is called Salvation Alley, and it's from the Roots of the Sun.
Send me a message, shout it out loud. What business do you have? You know this is my town. I told him he should listen. My friend, he had a plan. He
He said he didn't care, cause he controlled the game. Like a thief of state, he feeds off insecurity. He's a dangerous man, so full of himself. Sits at a desk, has trophies on his shelf. Dreams of empires on the maps. Looking at his plans, never looks into your eyes. He extends a limpid hand. Everything has a price. It's time for insurrection. I'm going to Salvation Alley, between chapel and ground, a place where we find a way to ever harm. Salvation Alley, hiding in plain sight, right before our eyes, the answer gave us life. He sits back in silence, never answers my calls. Barking his demands, he thinks he controls the ball. He knows what he knows, but doesn't realize the truth has prevailed. We've drained his well of lies. The time has come for you to leave. Your days are numbered. I'm going to Salvation Alley, between chapel and crown, a place where we find a way to ever harm. Salvation Alley, hiding in plain sight, right before our eyes, the answer gave us life. Salvation Alley, the music's in the air. There's nothing you can do. Perhaps, perhaps we'll see you there. The time has come for you to leave. Your days are numbered. The time has come for you to leave. Your days are numbered.
Salvation Army by Steve Mednick, local singer-songwriter, also an attorney. You can get that CD on CD Baby. It's called Root of the Sun. And you can get all Steve's music on CD Baby, or just look him up on Google, because he has a lot of different ways to get his music. We're at the Afro-Semitic News Hour, getting toward the end. I'm Paul Bass, talking about latest headlines. Rather than headlines, I want to talk about latest comments on a last week headline. We've talked about this on the air in WNHH about the homeless encampment in the woods off I-91. The city's trying to find homes for these people. They helped clear 12 tons of trash from the place. Had a real question about what you do with the homeless and how to do it humanely. And one of our regular commenters, Cedar Hill resident who lives in that neighborhood, talked about her own experience. I'd like to read what she wrote and what some people wrote back. And to me, it's an example of, you know, common threads get so nasty sometimes. We try not to let them be nasty at The Independent. Try to talk about issues. But sometimes they get into really good meaty issues where people have intelligent things to say. And when they're the best, people are open about themselves. They're humble about it, but have points of view. They listen to each other. And that's what I thought happened here. And Cedar Hill residents set the tone. She said, sadly, I've been dealing with this issue a lot longer than most know. My daughter, who was bipolar, is homeless. When she made her way back to New Haven and landed right in the hospital, I advocated her for best as I could. But sadly, the mentally ill in this city have fewer options than an addict or a mentally ill addict. There are no beds for the mentally ill homeless that have avoided becoming an addict. And yes, there are some services available, but they're geared for, quote, sane people. Mentally ill need to be approached differently. The way I see it, it has to be housing first. Once a person has a secure and safe place to stay, the rest will happen, but first you have to detox them for survival mode. So then three-fifths, and another commenter, V. Paul, talked about how New York pays relatives to keep mentally ill people and homeless people in their homes. That's cheaper than institutions. Cedar Hill resident responded. She said, "That's an idea that may work for a few, but again, I'm going to use my own experience as an example. Some mentally ill are not necessarily stable. My daughter can get downright violent for no reason. And last time we took her in, she had some shady people in my home when we were at work. A good part of New Haven homeless fit the same situation. Money like that for one person is a lot. What they need is supervised rooming houses. Many of these folks, again, are in survival mode. Their way of doing things and dealing with the world are off. They need to be reprogrammed, detoxed, and medicated. Then they need to learn of the basics again so they can hold a job." And an added note, some will say we have the Columbus House shelter. Yes, they offer nothing to the unstable, mentally ill, a cot, no caseworker. B. Paul said, "Yes, Cedar Hill, there is no universal solution. Certain methods may work for some, others we should be tackling the problem on multiple fronts." Glenn wrote, "The shelters aren't as good as you think. They look good, but many homeless have reasons not to stay in shelters, like drinking or drugging, or if they're married, like some of the people in off I-91. There really aren't enough shelters, and camping in winter is not an easy choice to make. I think it is an extreme choice. Homelessness is sometimes a way of life, I think, and some homeless are actually hardcore and helplessly independent." That keeps going, and Patricia Crane wrote about her brother who was diagnosed with bipolar, medicated to be a zombie, then he got mentally discharged and trying to find the right place for him. "It's a long, hard road," wrote Gretchen Pritchard. "Best wishes to you and your daughter and everyone we care about." Three Fifths wrote about his own family members. "I personally have had family members in a similar situation where we decided we couldn't house them to try to find the best place, and then you wonder at night if they're going to live through the night. And it's a tough situation, and I'm so glad that at a time when we have a lot of nastiness in our public discourse, and it does get sometimes too hostile and independent despite our best efforts, there's also a way we could talk about difficult issues and care about each other." That's my message today at the New Haven Independent and at WNHH's radio, Dateline New Haven, Afro-Semitic News Hour. So I want to thank you for joining today. We're going to take it out with another song by the Afro-Semitic Experience from their Plea for Peace album called "I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free." Now we know how it would feel to be free. We just got to remember to book our flight. So book your flight with us day in and day night, day out at the Dateline New Haven at WNHH Radio, your home for community radio at 103.5 FM, live streamed at newhavenindependent.org. We're going to listen to that song, "I Wish I Knew How It Would Feel to Be Free." Thank you for joining me today. And in the meantime, we're also going to switch you over to another former episode of Dateline New Haven, where we interviewed Steve Medick, whom you heard earlier, about a new album he has out for this political season. Thanks for joining us, folks.